going to finish up John 16 tonight, and then we'll move on to what is one of the favorite chapters of lots of people, John 17, Jesus' prayer in the Garden of Gethsemane. Prays for three things. He prays for himself, prays for his disciples, and then he prays for all believers. So we'll spend a week or maybe two on John 17. And then we'll get into the final days of Jesus. Remember, we want to discuss why Jesus had to die. We've thrown out a few things for you to think about, so I hope that you're readjusting your thinking a little bit and very interested to get that done in September. Let's start tonight with 16. Let's go back up and pick verse 16 of chapter 16, and then would somebody read 16 and then 17 and 18? Yes?
Not everybody knows what your questions were for them to be thought about. So are you going to go into that before the end of the
Well, day? I'll review them for those that haven't shown up lately. 2 weeks ago, the question was, if Jesus died for the universe, which he did, then how do we say that he died for people who never sinned? How does that fit into our answer? And then last week, we discussed if Satan or Lucifer had repented, would he have been accepted back into heaven? And you all said, absolutely, which I believe that wholeheartedly. If that happened, then would God have to look around and say, well, since you've sinned and repented, I still have to find somebody that I will kill in your place, because when you sin, somebody has to die. And you all said that you thought that was a little absurd. So I want you to keep that in mind when we come to the cross. Did somebody have to die? So
the difference in what you just said, though, you said God would have to kill somebody versus would somebody have to die.
I will contend they're the same. If that gives you a little hint of where I'm coming from, it might do that. All right, let's get to chapter 16. Let's finish it up. It's very good. Somebody start on verse 16, 17, and 18 for us, please.
In just a little while I will be gone, and you will see me no more. But just a little while after that, you will see me again. Whatever is he saying, some of his disciples asked. What is this about going to the Father? We don't know what he means.
Keep going.
Also?
Yes. No. Read 17 again. Your version must be a little different.
What is he saying? Some of his disciples ask. What is this about going to the Father? We don't know what he means.
Okay. All right. That's good. Dr. Taylor skips a little bit, but he always does. Some of the disciples said to one another, what does he mean by saying, in a little while you will see me no more, and then after a little while you will see me? Because I am going to the Father, they kept asking, what does he mean in a little while? We don't understand what he's saying. So Jesus has said to them, in a little while you're going to see me no more, then you're going to see me again. No wonder they were confused. What did he mean by this? This is where hindsight is beautiful. In a little while, you're not going to see me anymore. What does that mean?
It means he was going to go back to the Father.
He was going to die and be in the grave and be gone from them. And then he would come back.
Yes. Both of them are correct. His initial meaning was, I'm going to be gone, and then I'm going to come back. Little did they know that this was going to happen in a few hours. And then a wider perspective, obviously, he would go to heaven, and he will come back. And at the wider perspective, he'll go to heaven and come back and get all of us. So there's triple meaning there. I think the initial meaning was, I'm going to leave you, and you're going to see me. Yes, ma'am.
Did he also mean in that period of time, the time that he was, after he was resurrected from the grave, didn't he go to heaven,
yes,
see his Father, and then come back?
Yes. Yeah, so I think he meant all three. But the initial was preparing them for exactly what was going to happen in a few minutes. So they're sitting there talking among themselves. Well, what does he mean, a little while? What does he mean he's going to go to the Father? We don't understand a thing that he's saying. Well, this is nothing new. They haven't understood for 3 years what he's saying. But this got a little hard for them. Somebody read verse 19.
Jesus knew that they wished to question him, and he said to them, "Are you deliberating together about this that I said? A little while, and you will not see me, and again a little while, and you will see me."
Okay. So Jesus, being the type of person he is, as they're talking among themselves, he knows what's in their heart. He knows they're questioning. And so he takes advantage of the situation and just literally asks them, "Do you want some answers?" Well, of course they did. Verse 20, "I tell you the truth." Now, what do we learn when we see that? This is important. "I tell you the truth. You will weep and mourn while the world rejoices. You will grieve, but your grief will turn to joy." Now the next part I can't relate to, but I imagine some of you can. "A woman giving birth to a child has pain because her time has come, but when her baby is born, she forgets the anguish because of her joy that a child is born into this world. So it is with you." What period of time is he talking about here?
Our period of time when they will be by themselves. He'll be in, well, right now.
Yeah. Again, I think it's threefold. He's talking about exactly what's going to happen in the next few hours when they thought all was lost, all their dreams shattered, Peter denying him, all of them running. And then it turns to joy when he's resurrected. It turns to sorrow when he leaves and ascends to heaven. And what happened to these disciples as they began to take the message out to the world? What was their fate?
Well, they were martyred.
Yeah, all of them were martyred.
They didn't last long.
All of them were martyred. I think John's the only one that really died a natural death, but he was banished, so might as well. So here again, Jesus says, "I tell you the truth, you will weep and mourn while the world rejoices." Why would the world rejoice?
That's just what happened when he was crucified on the cross. It was the world, as they knew it, was their little Jewish population. And yep, that's what happened. The entire multitude was just ecstatic that he was being crucified.
Yeah, they had gotten rid of a big political problem. How does this affect us today, or does it?
Well, we can rejoice today that Christ died on the cross, I guess. Or...
Okay. Do we go through any sorrow? Do we go through any weeping? Do we go through any problems?
Yeah, everybody has problems.
Do you think this applies to us today?
I think it has. It applies to when we grieve that we've done such wretched things.
Okay.
Well, a life with Christ is always a joy. And a Christian
okay,
life,
we're even you're not going to be here tomorrow, right?
Uh-huh.
Well, we're sure going to ask Mr. Job about that.
Yes.
In Sabbath school.
Who?
Job.
Job?
Not Bob Job. Job.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And not Bob.
Not Bob, yeah. Job.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to ask Job tomorrow.
That's right.
Is that life with Christ just all up, all a bunch of joy?
That's what I said. You're going to have a lot of problems.
Oh, well,
but
okay.
The end results, the life with Christ is joy or will be joy.
Oh,
the
well,
end result is yes. joy.
Well, I absolutely agree with that. Because that's a promise.
Yes.
When Jesus says you will weep and mourn while the world rejoices, you will grieve, but your grief will turn into joy. That's not a statement. That is a promise. Because that is what sustains all of us as Christians. Being a Christian is sometimes has its ups and downs. But especially as you work with people you know and people you love, and you see them turning away or rejecting Christ or moving away, certainly you can't take joy in that. So there's a spiritual grief as well as a physical grief, but the promise is it will turn to joy.
But we in the United States have been protected a lot. There's good other around the world. There's people fear for their life every day that are. Follow Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I don't understand that. All I can say if it would happen, I hope I have the strength to deal with it because it takes a special strength.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's important that you must know God because that strength comes from God. A person I used to know say, well, you know, it's easier to die for Christ than to live for Christ. I don't know if there's a lot of truth in that statement, but sometimes that's kind of the way it seems.
That statement about the world being joyful would include the Greeks also, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And the world per se today has that same attitude of rejoicing. I mean, there's lots of times when ministers have problems. We got a Republican senator from Idaho that doesn't know how to come up with a good story, I guess, if you had to. But the world tends to want to see people fall. And the world tends to want to see Christians have problems. So this is something that Jesus is not just talking to 12 men. Though he's talking to them, he's talking about us. Because He could say to us today, I'll tell you the truth, you'll weep, you'll mourn while the world rejoices, you'll grieve, but your grief will turn to joy. And that's the promise he's given. Women giving birth, know nothing about it. Doesn't look like fun, so.
Well, I do. I have given hundreds of anesthetics for deliveries. And I have had patients before it's time to start the anesthetic. Screaming and yelling in pain. Get it out of here! Get it out of here! just like, I don't care if it's alive or dead, get it out of here. I mean, it's just really horrible. And as soon as that little thing comes out and says, wah, all of a sudden, she is totally different. Has no idea that there's no pain at all. Just give me my baby. Just a total different.
Mm-hmm.
You see that a few thousand times, and you understand that verse very
well. Yeah, I can imagine. Thank you for that illustration. But that is exactly
really
that's exactly what happened to Job.